SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Alrighty, are we live? No, we're not. We are on a recording tonight, and we are pleased to have our first guest ever on the Color Up podcast. We have Dr. Robert H. Scott III, PhD from Monmouth University, and he has written one of two papers, and he's a co-author of both of them, about this topic in our last episode that generated so much excitement. So we decided to go to the source and find out what is really possible with dice control.
Robert, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. So is it beyond, we're aware of two studies that you've put out and that's been published. Is there any additional work that you've done on this topic?
Those are the two primary studies. I have done one additional one where I was working on in fact, there's an interesting link to a paper where they developed a program that sort of looked at whether this was possible in a digital simulation. And I was doing a little bit of work with that. And I was also, my co-author, Bob Smith, and I were doing a little bit of work on if you had loaded dice and how loaded the dice needed to be in order to achieve certain outcomes. But none of that is, close to published. It's just...
Okay, so we've got a ton of questions with you, so bear with us. We might be jumping around and whatever. But I guess we should start with why the interest in... So the topic is dice control. And so it's very controversial. It's a big thing that I don't address much on my channel just because... Well, it doesn't hurt anything to try, for one. And then there are believers and non-believers, and I just kind of try to be apolitical, right? Why make one side of the group angry or not? But there just seems to be, compounded evidence that it's, maybe not a thing. So we want the expert on. But why the study? I mean, are you a craps player? Have you just picked up the topic? Or what got you started here?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not basically a craps player generally. I do like cards. I love numbers. I like math and probability. So naturally, I've always been interested in card counting and things like that. I find it interesting from an intellectual standpoint. I'm not as an economist. I'm not by nature a big gambler, but I'm interesting. I do enjoy sports gambling a lot, so I do that a lot. I always tell everybody that's not really gambling. If you know what you're doing, you can give yourself an edge. So how I got interested in it was sort of a weird circumstance. I was working for the Bureau of Labor Statistics between my master's and my PhD. And there was a guy there who said, we go down to the casinos and go to Vegas and we throw craps and we have this method of throwing the dice that we practice in my basement, and we are able to overcome the house edge in craps. And of course, obviously as an economist, I'm just like, okay, this guy, he's out of his mind. And then several years later, I was reading Cigar Aficionado magazine, and they had an article about Stanford Wong, his Wong on dice. And I read that article, and I thought back to this guy who I worked with, and I was just like, maybe this guy's onto something. And so I just packed in the back of my brain, and then, years and years and years later, I'm walking down the hall, and I don't know, Bob Smith and I, he's a physicist/operations management. He worked for Bell Labs, and it's just, he's really into this stuff, and we both love esoteric probability questions. And so we were talking about something about gambling and probability and distributions, and I said there's this crazy thing where you can control the dice. And he said no, there's no way and whatever. So I sent him the article. I found it, and I sent him some snippets, and he was just like, I think we could test this. And I'm like, oh, I said, I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. And so we that was the first paper, was sort of a, is this even possible, The idea is pretty straightforward. I mean, there's an old magician's trick that deals with this same problem. But, you know, as you guys know, most of your listeners know, you know, dice are always configured in the same way, right? They always, the sides always add up to 7. So 6 is always opposite the 1, the 5 is always opposite the 2, the 3 is always opposite the 4. So the dice are always arranged in the same way. And so, you know, the general idea of dice control is, you know, that we could get it, you know, get the dice spinning in such a way where you can, you know, basically keep the sides from being less likely to come up just a little bit. And, you know, you look at Tiger Woods making putts, I mean, you know, pre-drama Tiger Woods, or, you know, Michael Jordan, you know, making shots, or Steph Curry making threes. You know, it's...
You're talking about skilled things that, yeah, kind of boggle the mind, right?
Craps is the only game where you kind of, you control what happens, right? You own it, you know? I mean, the slot machine, yeah, you pull the lever, but, yeah, you don't really control the outcome, you know? But with dice, it's like I'm shooting free throws, you know? I'm shooting three-pointers. I'm, you know, there's no defense, right? And so you think... Well, it just feels so possible, right? So the appeal of it is like, man, this has got to be.
We certainly get the appeal for sure. I mean, we want the control and we want to believe we can win. So you put out your first paper, Golden Arm,
yep.
And it essentially was trying to figure out, well, what does it take to overcome the house edge, right? Because if you're going to do it, I guess the main objective would be overcome the house edge and then, you know, become profitable like a blackjack player. Absolutely. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, I guess you were, how you did it was, you know, you put the 1 and the 6, that's your dice set, on the outside, and you rotated them to try to keep, minimize the 7.
Correct. In the come out.
You're right. And then so you found a certain percentage or number is what you have to do to, with a pass line bet, the most basic bet, and a great low house edge bet, 1.4%. So you don't have to overcome much. But what does it take? What did you find that? How does the math break down on that?
So we looked at all the different sets, all the different ways you could set up the dice. Basically, there's only 6 ways to do it. And what we found was that if 0% is totally random, and 100% is perfect control, where I could get those dice spinning and only the top 4 sides of the dice would show up every time. So that'd be perfect.
So they never tip or, I guess, off axis.
100% would be perfect control, where those side numbers never come up. We calculated you needed just a hair over 8% level of control. And that just isn't a lot. And that's basically the break-even point. If you're even better than 8%, then you're profitable. So just a little over 8%, you know, whereas again, 0 is just, you know, throwing them just random style, you know, you give no thought to it whatsoever. So 8% just felt, you know, very doable.
So essentially, if you can throw 10% better than random, you could theoretically become a professional or be able to consistently make money, right?
Yeah.
Or make large bets or.
It's a bit like counting cards or anything. You know, you get even 0.1% edge on the house, and you know,
the races, okay.
Eventually.
So, what as far as like 8%? I guess that's an 8% improvement. I know most of us know the math that the 7 should roll 1 out of 6 time. Does that mean how many? If you got to reduce that, push the 7 off a couple more rolls. What does 8% improvement look like as far as? A lot of guys call it the 7-to-rolls ratio or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little hard to calculate because it's taking all the different possible sort of best set combinations into consideration. So, for example, on the come out roll, we want to minimize the 2, 3s, and 12s, right? And we want to maximize, obviously, the 7s and 11s. And then after that, we want to maximize the points. Well, depending on what point you get, it's going to depend on how you set the dice. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, if you want a 6, well, a particular dice set is going to be more optimal than another. You always want to minimize the 7, but you also want to increase your chances of getting your point. So what we did with our model optimizes all of those different possible combinations. So this would be in the series of, you know, I mean, it doesn't really give a specific number necessarily as far as how many rounds it would take, but you know, you could think of it as a again, it's essentially a consistent level of control. You know, if you could consistently every time throw the dice where you're just 8% better than random, which again is, you know, less than 1/10 of the time, you will consistently win over a, you know, a series of, let's say, you know, standard hands.
And I think that that's an argument that a lot of dice controllers make is like, listen, I'm not going to get it perfect every time, but I only need a small percentage. And you agree with that, that it does truly only take a small percentage.
Absolutely. Just like in baseball, right? You know, a 300 average, well, you know, you're missing 70%, you know?
Yeah.
So this is kind of like all you need is an 8%, you know, average. You know, again, Steph Curry shoots what, you know, 40%, you know, three pointers or something like that. Well,
yeah, isn't that right?
You know, 8%, you know, 100% would be perfect control. 0% would be him, you know, throwing it in the dark, right? So 8%, you know, I mean, it just feels so possible. Yes, but that is right. The argument is you don't have to be perfect at it. You don't have to make, you know, have it happen every single time. You just have to be a little bit better than random.
So you mathematically set the standard. We needed to be 8% better. And I'm assuming that led you to your next study, which is A Paradise Lost, Experiments in Dice Control. And is that what kind of led you to that, or how do you?
Yeah, this is kind of my out on a limb, you know, after doing the first paper. It was just, I'll be honest with you, I was so intrigued with the idea. Mm-hmm. That I just thought, you know, I built a bunch of, I told you before, I built a bunch of simulations, you know, on the computer that sort of randomized a bunch of dice rolls. And I'm doing all these computer simulations. I'm looking at this and I'm like, yeah, this is interesting and it's cool and all, but we really need to roll the dice, right? I mean, we literally have to go and get the dice and find a way to replicate this, because, you know, simulations are nice, but they're not reality, you know? And so, so that's what motivated. I was like, I couldn't let the idea sleep. I have to admit, I mean, you know, my kids will tell you, I taught both of my kids how to play craps through this whole process, you know, because this is like a 2-year, you know, thing. So I'm like in the corner, like throwing craps with my kids. And, you know, I just like, you know, my wife was about to kill me. But, so I kind of became obsessed with the idea, to be quite honest. And so I was like, I have to find a way to test this. And so spent, you know, a lot of months just thinking about, you know, what kind of machine would work best, you know, how to design this thing, you know, some of my friends.
I want to stop you. So one of the lines in your study said, so in theory, if the exact initial conditions could be repeated, then the results would also be repeated. So I guess you decided you needed to build some sort of machine to make exact initial conditions as opposed to like you throwing them yourself and testing.
Precisely. My initial idea was, hey, let me get a couple of, you know, let me get a group of students from the basketball team or from the baseball team or something, you know, kids who are athletically, you know, inclined, and see if they could, you know, hire them to basically teach them to roll the die. And that was my initial grant that I put in for it, you know, had that in there. And then I was like, you know, I mean, it's a great idea, but even if they can't do it, people are going to say, well, they just weren't good at it, right? In other words, it's going to take years to train them. I mean, Steph Curry didn't learn to shoot a three, you know, in a day. So, you know, I really need, basically, the students are just going to be random, even if they are talented. And if I do have one who's talented out of eight, you know, it just didn't work. So that was sort of my initial idea. I had some other crazy ideas that I won't bring up, but I had a bunch of crazy thoughts. So I was like, okay, so then the only way to do it is to try, you know, I'm no engineer by any means, to build a machine that could throw the dice in all the different ways that would be possible. So I started just scouring the internet to see if there was anything, you know, robotic arms or whatnot. And, you know, I found a couple of guys on YouTube who had built, you know, one guy had this machine that was kind of angled like an L, and it threw the dice like this, you know, where it hit the thing and, you know, threw the dice. And it looked really interesting because actually he set it up where, oh, it'd be you know, boxcars, you know, and he threw it and it, you know, did, you know, it turned out that way. So like, oh, that's interesting. So I emailed him, contacted him, and you know, we talked for a bit back and forth by email. And he basically said, he didn't really know of any way to sort of improve it. You know, he kind of lost interest. And so I just kind of started from scratch. You know, what do I want this thing to look like? And I talked to a bunch of dice controllers and sort of said, you know, what do we need to control? You know, what are the factors? Well, one was the spin rate, right? So one, like backspin, was one really common technique. Both of the die needed to be right next to each other. So that was another, you know, condition that I wanted to meet. I also wanted the angle of this thing to be able to adjust, right, up and down so that we could perfect it. I wanted the speed of the backspin to be controllable, like, you know, what RPMs are best, right? And you know, is it a slow spin? Is it a fast spin? You know, what conditions were best? And so I sort of came up with a bunch of different ideas and I ended up talking to a friend of mine who I went to college with in Colorado, Nate, and he said, what you need is a machinist, really, who, like, loves craps or loves gambling and, you know, and get them to help you build this thing. You know? And so he put me onto a website that I, you know, went on and posted what I was doing and what my ideas were. And a guy down near Atlantic City reached out to me and said, yeah, I could do this, no problem. And so he's who, you know, named the device. So we got together.
I have a picture here of it that I'll bring up here for us.
Yep.
Lucky Lil, you named it, I guess.
Lucky Lil, yeah, he got to name it after his granddaughter. So great guy. And you know, really had a passion for it and obviously built a beautiful, because the only thing I gave him was I kind of gave him what I wanted it to do. And I gave him that rail. You know, I gave him that rail that they kind of sat in because I thought, ooh, it'd be cool to, you know, have it kind of consistently go up. And so that ram, there's a little ram rod down there that you can do all kinds of, you can adjust the springs, you can adjust the tension, the load, all the rest of it. And we've replaced springs as they became weak. And the ram rod would be able to hit it either like it could put topspin on the dice, it could hit, throw them like a knuckleball, right in the middle, or it would hit them like way down low and put a ton of backspin on. And so that was the idea. Again, you know, not an engineer, but, you know, trying to replicate what dice controllers do and what they promote.
And so with this machine, you found out it did pretty good. I mean, the result, I guess one of the questions we have you about you is, I guess you filmed this.
Yeah. I did, yeah. One of the things I wanted to do was we have to calibrate the machine. And I tried using like a GoPro and phone camera for the speed. It just wasn't quite to spec. So I really needed a high speed camera that could do this at, you know, really, really high resolutions to pinpoint exactly the optimal initial conditions to basically get the machine where we thought it was perfect. You know, the angle was right, the spin rate was right, the, you know, everything about it. And so I had this guy, so I contacted Phantom Cameras. They're the, you know, the creators, you know, they make these really good, high quality, high speed cameras. And this guy just reached out to me and just said, oh, this is super cool. Like, yeah, I can do that. And he comes down, I mean, he's a super, super nice guy, And he comes down and just spends the whole day with us, you know, just like getting me, and I had two students who helped with this project, and he was great. In fact, he told me, I'm just coming up from Annapolis because I had spent the last 3 days filming rail guns for the Navy. Okay. I'm like, okay, so you're going from like filming rail guns, you know, for the Navy to watching craps. He's like, yeah, he said, honestly, he said, this is just as interesting, to be quite honest. Super cool guy, and Andy was his name, and he spent all day and into the night with us, just really fine tuning the machine where everything was to spec, and we basically got it as sort of dialed in as perfect as possible, and then we just.
So you're talking backspin, rate of throw, angle, and you, because you can see this in slow motion.
Exactly.
You're pretty confident you've
very
precise throw.
Right. I mean, I'm
compared
not
to like here. A human, which maybe could hit instances of a great throw, but not the precision and accuracy you're talking, even close to what you're talking about.
That was the goal, right? I mean, the goal was to create a machine that would be far more consistent than a human, right? And my idea was, hey, if you can set up a machine that they can, you know, make putts on a putting green or, you know, or free throws, right? It's gonna make them every time. I mean, maybe it misses one out of 10,000 or something, you know. But
yeah, I've seen this robot recently that's shooting like three pointers in basketball. Right. And it's like amazing. It's weird, but
exactly right, precisely. So that was the idea. That was the intent. Now, whether I achieved that or not, you know, who knows? But I do feel as though, at least with everything we had and all the, you know, we did the best we could with all the resources that we had to really give it an honest go. And I mean, I'll be honest with you. I wanted it to work so badly. You know, I so much wanted this to, like, you know, I mean, there were moments.
Well, you got a perfect rolling machine at this point.
Exactly.
Now it comes down to the testing, right?
Yeah, precisely. And, you know, and there were times when it would run, it would do like exactly what we wanted, you know, a bunch of times in a row. And, you know, we would just get super excited, you know. So anyway, I mean, part of the process too was I rented a craps table and I put it in the atrium of the business school for an entire summer. And in fact, the dean at the time was not very happy with me putting a craps table in the, I honestly didn't really honestly ask his permission. I just did it, and it just showed up one day. And I said, "Oh well, you know, I guess I forgot to mention, you know." And so then, so I spent the summer teaching my students how to play craps as well. So we had a good time with that. In fact, we had so much fun with it because I was actually teaching a stats class during the summer. We had so much fun with it that I was going to buy one. I had some grant money, and I was like, "Oh, we'll just buy a craps table and put it here, you know, full time." And that didn't happen. So they shot me down on that. I thought it'd be great. But I said, look, we can solve all kinds of problems with craps. You know, like, hey, you want to retake this test? Well, you know, let's go to the table. You know, let's see what you got.
Yeah, math, statistics, probability. There's a lot of factors. Physics, I mean, there's all kinds of things, right?
I know, right? And I just, I lost that. So we have the craps table. It's set up. You know, we got the camera, we dialed in the machine, and then the students just did tons of rolls just to see, you know, basically from you know, the conditions with the, I mean, right now it's set up with a 5-5 on top, but we set them up the basically exact same way every single time. And we were looking to see if we could minimize those side numbers, you know, and the goal was simply that, you know, was just, can we throw the dice consistently enough to minimize them. And initially, you know, we did the rolls initially, doing everything. We did a combination where obviously the dice hit the back wall. We did a combination where we did short rolls where they didn't roll. We tried it on different conditions. In fact, it's interesting, there's a physics article that's, you know, cited in my paper where guys were using high-speed cameras to look at dice thrown on glass, and how you could actually predict which dice would come up more often, which was also something that I was like, hey, you know, if it works on glass, you know, maybe it's possible on, you know, on a new felt table, right? So we you know, basically did every combination possible. We even toward the end, you know, got really extreme with it where we adjusted, you know, the angle on it to just, you know, put like massive RPM on the dice and, you know, basically throwing them like baseball, you know, knuckleballs and throwing them high with a ton of spin. You know, we did things that were basically impossible for a human being to do, just to try to, you know, find some way to see if it was possible to, control the dice. And, you know, so, And at the end of the day, you know, as was discussed, you know, we just we weren't able to come up with anything. We had one series of rolls that were different from random. It was about maybe a few hundred rolls in a series, and those were definitely, we were getting sort of, you know, outcomes, but they weren't really the outcomes we were expecting. So that was, you know, in other words, we weren't minimizing the side numbers like we wanted to. So that was kind of the opposite of what we anticipated. So
you found, because I know like a lot of old school guys say, well, maybe it doesn't, it's not a thing anymore because you have to hit the diamond rubber walls and that's, you know, caused so much different chaos versus in the old days we would be able to land them on the felt and just gently kiss the wall. So you tried all these different things and are there, in this, like you mentioned the glass surface, are there, you just didn't find differences in these?
I didn't. I tried linoleum. You know, I tried glass. We tried lots of different things just doing short rolls, you know, and we also did them where it hits the back wall, but if it hits those triangles on the back wall, it's over. I mean, and I'll tell you the thing that, was a little disheartening initially, because again, I wanted this to work so badly, because obviously if it did, you know, it's fascinating.
Yeah. Groundbreaking. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, oh, this would be so cool. And again, it was just fun. But when Andy was doing the filming and we were looking at the dice, I mean, you know, again, his cameras are, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And he had this crazy setup with the lights and everything else. I'll be honest. I mean, when the die hits, the felt, there's really no predicting, you know, how that thing's going to go.
You gave an analogy in your study, if you remember it, otherwise I have it written down, about like a pitching machine and then a baseball hitting machine.
Right.
And then kind of, I guess that's like chaos or kinetic energy, I guess is the proper term for it. But can you explain that or like why? Absolutely. I mean, if the theory is the exact initial condition, and you're replicating that, I mean, pretty darn good. You're repeating it. Why aren't the results? Why are they becoming random? If it doesn't, that doesn't make common sense. If you're getting an exact explain a little bit of that, why it's not working.
Sure. Sure. So what I believe, now Bob actually is a physicist. I am not, I mean, he's an operations management guy, but he has not, his undergrad was in physics, but essentially what happens, the analogy you're speaking about is if you had a hitting machine that get hit from one bat to another, right, perfectly, and then you had a third machine where it hit from there to the next machine and then to the next machine, the next machine, eventually it would get out of whack, because they're just small little variations in the wind or the temperature or the spin on the ball, or, you know, the ball compresses, you know, too much, just slightly at the wrong angle at the wrong time, is going to mean that the ball will not be hit the exact same way every single time.
So the first machine, probably no problem hitting home runs, but once it's hitting from one machine to the next.
Correct. Exactly. Then that takes over. And where you see it, again, when the die hits the back wall, hits the triangular back wall, like it's absolutely over. But I'll be honest with you, it happens even before then. When the dice hit the table, you know, when the dice come down, because we're putting them at a decent angle, you know, when the dice hit that felt, I mean, they're just kaboom. I mean, it turns chaotic. It really is not predictable. Now, we had rolls where the die would land perfect. In fact, one of the analogies, I don't know if this was in the paper, I don't think so, but I said that, you know, if at the time when we were doing this, I said, you know, if we had Jell-O, right, on the table, if the table were made of Jell-O and the dice were spinning and they hit, right, the machine was good enough that as we were looking at the camera, if it was made of Jell-O and it just, you know, or marshmallow or something really, really soft, and the dice landed in that, it would we had it where it landed perfectly.
You did mention that it was mud in the paper.
Right, exactly.
If you could stick it in mud, it would work. You did mention
precisely that. So the machine.
So they're landing essentially perfect, just if they can just stop there with no more energy.
Precisely. Then we had it nailed. I mean, the machine was dead on every single time. I mean, In other words, there was no, in fact, if the dice hit each other in air, we just, you know, we eliminated that, you know, that roll. It didn't happen very often, but, you know, cause they were pretty close to each other, but there were times when one would like nick the other and then we'd be like, all right, we'll throw that roll out. That doesn't count. So we do it again. But it didn't happen very often. But we had it where, you know, bang on, you know, 99.99999% of the time, if it landed in that soft, if the craps table were super soft, it was landing face sides up. What happens though, because it's hard, right? There's wood underneath and you got the felt. When those dice hit the table, those suckers just boom, you know, it's game over already. To be honest,
it's not giving me much hope here.
I know. It was disheartening to me when I was watching the video footage. I'm like, man, those dice are really like just jumping. You know, as soon as they hit the table, like it just whoosh. You know, they're going all over the place. I was still optimistic, but it was a little sad.
How about where they land? Like, did they consistently end up in the same spot, or were they all over the place?
Yeah, that was one thing that, again, with the speed and the spin, we were able to get them to land pretty consistently in the same spot.
So the landing zone was good, but what about where they ended up?
Yeah, they're varied because sometimes they would hit and they would, you know, go opposite direction. Sometimes, again, they would hit into each other. You know, sometimes they'd spin forward and, you know, is it one to go forward, one to go backwards, you know? So, there was no predicting where they would end up. And sometimes they'd end up in like crazy places, like a double bounce hit. And like one die would end up at one end of the table and the other dice would end up 8 feet, 9 feet on the other end of the table. Sometimes the die, even though we were shooting it, we were trying not to shoot it too far, but let's say we were shooting them. I can't remember what the distance was. We'll say 4 feet or, you know, 3.5 feet or something like that.
Yeah, 4 was what you had in paper.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the die were ending up behind the machine, you know? So like, we really tried. And again, maybe there's somebody out there. I still like to think, some people say to me, oh, you know, I was talking to one guy. He said, well, do you think, you know, you sort of have the final say on this? I said, I really hope not. You know, I hope I haven't had the final say. I really hope. And one of the reasons I'm doing this podcast is I hope that there, you know, are engineers out there or whatnot that, you know, could look at this and study this and come up with some, I'd love for somebody to show that it's possible. You know, I hope people don't just take the results I found and sort of say there's no way. I hope there's someone crazy and a little bit crazier than me out there and, you know, wants to design something that could potentially do it. As I said, I do have some simulations out there that say that, you know, it is possible, but again, it's not real world. So,
Yeah. And unfortunately, like you're saying, there just really isn't studies done on it.
It was surprising, really.
You did mention a real world study by a Stanford Wong, which is an author about gambling,
and he's recently refuted his own book. I mean, his own book, Wong on Dice. He was on a podcast. I can't remember when it was, not too long ago, where he said basically, you know, it really doesn't work.
Yeah, I was actually listening to that today as preparing for this. He said, if you want to get serious about money or making money in casinos, craps is not the game to play. And the conversation was kind of backing off of what he initially published in his book. And he's like, you know, I'd like to believe, but it's, you know, he did win with a challenge where he was trying to throw less sevens when probability dictates. He accomplished the feat. I don't know if it's 8%. You might know the numbers better than I did.
Yeah, it was better than 8%. Yeah, okay. They did very well. I think Wong, you know, he had was a little Joe Green, right?
Who yes.
was, you know, he did much better than 8%. Stanford Wong just did, you know, basically a little bit better.
It was only over 500 throws, which I guess like you, that's not significant. Yeah.
No, the power rule needed to be in the thousands, for it, you know, to be fully significant. But you know, hey, 500 rolls, you know, still in a real casino setting in real conditions, you know, and then that's how they did it. Was pretty cool. You know, it's a cool story in the book. You know, where he bet all kinds of people. He said, you know, take the over, take the under, you know, and you know, I'm gonna put it out there. And you know.
So, you know, but what if your machine did 500 rolls? You would say sometimes it would, sometimes it wouldn't, because your results are random, or what?
Yeah, I mean, as an econometrician, 500 rolls wouldn't do it.
Okay, because, you just wouldn't. I mean, just
mathematically, it's just, again, you need you know, thousands of rolls before you could really say that you've overcome that there's a pattern that exists.
So I love that you're holding out hope and that someone will outdo your study, but where is your breakdown? I mean, it sounds like you dialed in the machine. Do you think the breakdown is in the landing material and zone? Or, I mean, because as dice players, we know there is no standard. There's no table. There's all manufactured. They're all different heights. They now put all kinds of different under. So they're making it even harder for us as players because there is no standard. But if you would, do you think the breakdown is in the landing and the standard material at the end? Or because it sounds like the throwing part, you got dialed in. I don't like, where's the breakdown that you would like to see the improvement?
Yeah. If you really, based on the research and you know, my own months, really years of looking at it, you want to land the dice as sort of low to the table as possible. Okay, that'd be number one. And you'd want the felt to be very new, right? So you'd want it to be very, very slick. You know, you'd want the felt to be really as smooth and sort of free of any errors as possible. The other thing you'd look for is which most casino dice are perfect dice. So in other words, you want to make sure those edges are really smooth and clean, as clean as possible. And again, if you have those conditions, as our first paper showed, setting the dice properly, you know, if you have those proper setups, then setting the dice and throwing them in that way will, you know, you could achieve, you know, at least not lose as much of your money as quickly. You know, can you overcome the 1%, you know,
you add odds and you get it less than half, but okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what I would be interested in seeing would be somebody to develop like a hand, right, that sort of throws the dice, you know, in the way that's sort of anticipated. And again, just look at different, like you said, different felt types, you know, old versus new.
So a lot of felt, you know, they start getting the dings and spots. So new felt, brand new dice without any wear. I know there's a lot of conversation guys that like locate low throw. A lot of guys like hard surfaces and some like soft. Now, earlier you mentioned ideally if it just stuck in mud, but you'd be good with your machine. But what should you think players in real world, softer, bouncier, or hard would be better?
I would go with a harder surface if you're using this specific technique. Because one of the things we did was, you know, you can see the machine is, gosh, I can't remember what it is, you know, 18 inches high or something. One of the things we did was we also built a platform that lowered it down so that, you know, we were basically just flush with the table, a little bit above, and then we're shooting, you know, on top. So we were able to change that as well. And one of the things we found was that, you know, if you would want a really new felt, you'd want a hard table, and you'd want it to be as glass-like as possible, and you'd want to have a low throw with some backspin, and that's going to give you sort of the best case scenario, because when they hit, that kinetic energy is going to be sort of as small as possible, and it'll look like a legitimate throw. So, you know, the craps dealer isn't going to, you know, say, you know,
angle of launch. Yeah. I mean, did you find anything?
Again, it not enough that I sort of went, wow, you know, that's it. You know, the one thing I will say that didn't work was it absolutely categorically did not work, were, were really high, you know, where they went up high and came down, that didn't work. So, you know, so again, that lower angle was better. The other thing that didn't work at all was doing like a knuckleball. So like throwing the dice where they would sort of, you know, like a knuckleball, you know, where they'd stay the same.
No all spin. The way through. Okay.
Forward spin, not good. You know, they call that blanket rules back in the day, you know? And so they used to say, oh, if you could put forward spin on it, that would help. I actually found the forward spins were worse. That's what we found. So forward spin does not work. Backspin's definitely the way to go. Because what it does is again, if you can do it properly, it slows them down, right, when they hit. And then they kind of skid a bit on their edges like this. And if you can get them to sit down on those edges and not be hitting against each other, you know, if you can get that to happen, you know, you're on to something there. You know, I mean,
Neufeld, sharp dice, low right. angle, low toss,
backspin. Yep.
Is your best case scenario. Yeah.
And again, how much that cuts into that 1.41%, I just, you know, again, my, let's just put it this way, not enough for me to quit my job and roll crap call. Well,
apparently no one else yet. So that's one of my, I try to play devil advocate. I'm like, there are no published professional craps players. I mean, right. Where in other games there are, where you could mathematically prove you can gain an edge and that sort of thing. So that's anecdotal, I guess. But this is all, you know, the arguments for and against are kind of anecdotal. And people are like, well, it works for me. And I'm like, well, that's great. I mean, I appreciate it's great. It's great for the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, if
Jim's a little more hardcore against it, but.
Yeah, well, I'm just going with his study, Jeremy. If you read the conclusion in here,
but he leaves hope even he, after
no, no,
his study.
No,
he's
but,
like,
but he does. But he drops little nuggets throughout the paper, saying what his really deep down thoughts
what do you got
are.
There,
he
Jim?
Wants hope. He says. He talks about the failed desire.
You could refute any
desire.
Of these, Robert.
Yeah, he says. However, even in this failure, we believe that every effort did shed light. Considerable light on the possibility of either a human being or machine attaining such a level of control, although a more sophisticated machine can be built or the parameters further tweaked. We are much more skeptical than before we started that such control either by machine or human was possible. Do you still stand beside that? Stand behind
yeah,
that?
I hate to say it, but I do. I really do. Having seen the outcome, and the thing is, I've come to love craps.
That's cool.
I love sports betting and other games too. But I mean, I've just come to love craps with the history of dice and the way the game is developed and the way the social and again
has a physical aspect to it. You know, that's
it's a fun game. I've really come to appreciate it and in a way that I never did before. But I do stand, Jim, I do stand by that statement. I think it seems very unlikely, given as much work as we put into this, that somebody could, maybe they could build a machine that works better. But even if they do, I still think the outcome's the same.
And then go ahead, Jeremy. Go ahead.
No. I mean, we're talking about gambling, so. Yeah, we're getting precise and try to get a number, but I mean, how close are we to, I mean, ultimately we're trying to gain an edge and earn money. And you're talking about getting random results with, you know, a darn near perfect machine. How close are we to gaining an edge? Or are you just saying it's just so random that it just doesn't like.
Yeah. As I said earlier on, we saw patterns that emerged, but they just weren't enough, or they, you know, the sequences weren't long enough that we could.
You couldn't find an investor to bankroll you at gambling.
No,
because that's kind of one of my.
Not. Yeah. Okay. No, and you know, look, I mean, I don't. Of all the people I've talked to and met and emailed over the years, nobody is quitting their jobs to play craps professionally. You know, whereas you know, again, poker, sports gambling, some other things, you know, there are people out there who, you know, have the skill. In fact, I have a paper coming out soon on, you know, whether poker's skill or luck, and, you know, show pretty convincingly that it's skill. You know, there is a skill to it. It can be learned. And, yeah, that should be published hopefully any day now. But this, I don't see anybody yet.
So there's no truth that Dr. Smith, which is your co-author, didn't join us today because he's now just professionally gambling.
No. Yeah. he would love to think that. But he is enjoying life in Idaho now. Yeah. He's learning to ski and enjoy the mountain life, free of craps, drama. Yeah.
I would like to, tell you that there's one very important thing, and it's the last line in your paper and your conclusion. It says, while we do not expect our experimental findings to be the final word on dice control, we hope that it stimulates further discussion and experiments. And I will say you've gotten a lot of discussion off of this thing, but I haven't seen a lot of people running to do more experiments. And that tells me how much of a good job and quality that you guys do, because in the academic world, you know, that's all you guys do is shoot bullets at each other and you know, try to tear this guy down and this guy's up and that every kind day. Of thing. So that tells me the quality.
Effort, time, expense, they
would go after you. Because everybody wants a free trip to present in Vegas. You know,
oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it's I mean, a lot of people, you know, especially when I initially, you know, submitted the grant, it initially got denied because they sort of said it was crazy. And I said, well, that's why you do it. You know, I mean, you do it because, yeah, it's fun. It's not, you know, academics shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't all be boring. I appreciate that. I hope that people who are interested in the topic have read our work and sort of said, yeah, this seems pretty definitive. But I really do hope there are people out there, again, with a, you know, mechanical engineering bent who sort of say, I've got a different idea, you know, for a machine. I got a different way to set this up that maybe could do it. But I was surprised when I was doing the research that there was just really nobody doing that. Especially with craps, you know, there's so many books on dice control.
There's rumor. Well, Jim could tell you there's rumor that the casinos have possibly done the studies, but, you know, they don't want that out there because it's good business. It's good for business, right?
It's funny because they have craps tables that record the numbers. And I reached out to all of them to try to get their data and none of them would bite.
No. It seemed like the slow-mo video footage kind of played a lot into your thought process or debunk. Can you just recap a little bit of what that meant to you? I mean, because with the naked eye, you know, they hit, they maybe roll once, it looks like they come to a decent stop.
That's right.
And I guess under high speed camera, it's a little different.
Oh boy, it was really sort of illuminating. You know, I mean, it was when you saw it on the high speed camera, just you know, down to the, you know, you're zeroed right in on, you know, you're able to look at just exactly where it's hitting, and, you know, it's such a slow, you know, one millionth of a second, you know, it just, boy, when that thing hits, it just, one of the students, you know, would be like, oh, it's going to go right, and the other one said left, and they would shoot forward. I mean, there was just no way to predict it. Even at that level, you know, that second before it hit, it really does look like a chaotic process. I mean, it may be deterministic in some way. And again, maybe somebody could configure that. I mean, you know, they beat games like roulette, you know, by using the, you know, the physics. So, you know, it's not to say that it's impossible. It felt so, the idea that a human being could throw these dice under a casino level conditions and do it better than the machine just didn't.
Any chips on the table? Did you ever have any chips on the table?
We did. Yeah. For fun. Okay. We did not do that for the experiments just because we thought that, you know, would create,
another,
it is a real
variable,
world scenario,
right?
Because obviously, you know, in a normal table, they're there. But we didn't do that. But I do have chips of my own that we brought in that we, you know, played with. You know,
was the video footage published anywhere, or Hey, is there any way we can get a hold of this?
Yeah, I can.
If this is something we could put up on the Color Up channel, I've done some slow-mo, but I've only been able to access like 60 frames per second. I mean,
yeah, the things are, in fact, it's right here is the hard drive, my external hard drive. All, so, yeah, it's all here. The only trick with the stuff is that you have to download Phantom's program, and you can do all kinds of cool stuff with that. You know, look at like the angle, the tack, the speed. I mean, you can do everything with it. So all the footage is here. I mean, we captured everything, so pretty much everything. So yeah, no, it's there. It's just the files are huge. I mean, this is like, you know, a terabyte, you know, and it just,
yeah, I might have to pay to send you some hard drive and copy this though.
Yeah, right. I might actually have an extra, you know, I got some pretty big. At my work, this is my home, but you know, at work, I've got some pretty big flash drives that I
no,
got.
No. This is huge for the community. Yeah, I'd be willing to send you one pre-addressed envelope with the hard drive. You just tell me how much room terabytes you need, and boy, if we can get this out there, I think it would be very cool for people to see test in video form as well.
It's fun to watch. Yeah, no, absolutely, and I mean, obviously, you know, an academic paper, you know, I couldn't include the video footage. We were going to upload the video footage, but the files were so large at the time that, you know, you would just need a massive, you know, space to be able to put them up. But probably today it wouldn't be that big of a deal.
No.
Probably upload them. But yeah, no, it's funny because I actually I thought I had it work, but I forgot I brought it home.
Okay. All right. I might be
over right here.
Letting you know what content you have to show, that could be something. Yeah. So
no, that would be awesome. Share it. Yeah, no, it's super fun to watch, and I do think that, especially knowing the work we put into getting the situation just as right as we could, watching the dice, you know, interact and, you know, with the table, just it was sad.
I got a question for you.
Yes.
When you go to the table, real table and play, do you set the dice?
Yes.
And what set do you use? Because I know we've got a lot of people in the Color Up community want to know what the expert does.
Yeah. So, okay. In the paper, it's got the different configurations to what to use. So if it's a come out roll, right, very initial, I want to eliminate entirely 2, 3s, and 12s. And obviously I want a 7 or 11. So I use what's called the AA set, where you've got the 6 and the 1s on the outside.
Right.
Okay. So 6 and the 1s on the outside. And then and again, I do backspin. I hit the angle 8 miles per hour, by the way, is just.
Oh, wow. You got it dialed in that much. That's awesome.
Oh, absolutely.
We forgot that 8 miles per hour. Yeah, okay. I'm writing that down.
It's like 8 point something. Oh, and I did a bunch of crazy. I had a friend of mine who's in the chemistry department, Max. He has one of those special scales. So I bought a whole bunch of casino grade dice, and I weighed all of them to make sure that they were perfect. And I threw out any of them that weren't exactly the same weight. And I also ordered this thing that was ridiculously expensive. I don't know, actually, it's at work, but ridiculously expensive, where you put the die in this little thing and you spin it. And it's supposed to spin evenly, you know, like a wheel. And if it doesn't, then it means the dice is out of balance. So we made sure to test all the die to make sure that they were kind of as perfect as possible. We also used some imperfect dice, too, just to see, you know, maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. But, you know, we couldn't go too crazy, or we'd still be, you know, rolling dice.
Doing it today, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, eventually
we go on forever. Right? There's so many different variables you can throw at it, right?
You got to publish it, Jeremy. You got to publish it.
Yeah. I mean, it gets crazy after a while, I absolutely do. So like for the initial roll, I throw with that AA set, the one on the 6 on the outside, and I do the backspin 8 miles per hour. I launch at I believe it's a 35 degree angle. You know, it's where you want to launch. Oh yeah, no, I am.
Write that down, too, Jeremy.
I got it written down. 8 miles, new dice, new felt, 8 miles per hour, 35 degree launch, backspin.
Yeah. Right.
And then after the come out roll, what are we doing?
Well, it depends on your point. So I don't have it memorized off the top of my head.
But we can look at your report, and I'll have that link below so people can see.
If you want a 6 or an 8, you know, it has a table in there that sort of sets up all the different sets and gives the frequencies of the outcomes based on what are the top, you know, what those top numbers are. But yeah, no, it was funny. My sister and I were actually at a casino and we were playing craps and I was setting the dice and I was just following the rules. I mean, and I had a nice roll. I mean, I went over 30, you know, 30 throws or whatever. My sister's just like, yeah, she's just like, you got it figured out, you know, like, you know, you got this. And of course, you know, the next few times, you know, it's like, I went out like right away. I said, it's variance, you know, what can I do?
It's like a baseball pitcher. You don't always have your A game. Yeah.
So, exactly. I guess it's confirmation bias because there's so many players that say it really is invariance. You know, they have their own personal antidotes. Because I just take them as soon as I get them, I wing them down there, and I've had 40, 50 rolls. Amazing. Yeah. And my personal antidote is that it seems to me that all the random rollers tend to do better than the guys who take the time and set and throw. And obviously, you said variance, but. It's interesting that you said them, and after your study, and I mean, hey, we still want to try, right? We still want to win, and
it's still the dream, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, I still love to think, you know, I could get, those golden arm 1 hour rolls, you know, going sometime.
Absolutely,
it has to happen to somebody. Why not me?
But I love that you figured out that we need, you know, the launch angle, the speed, and how they should drop. And
it's all in the paper.
Got that part. It's all there. Yeah. So now we just got to repeat it as best we can, right?
Absolutely. That's right.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, I appreciate you joining us, Jim, unless you got any last questions.
Let the doctor go.
Again, commend him for a study.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, I will follow up with you.
Yeah, we're rooting for you. We want the dice. We're not against dice control.
Nope.
If I'm at the table, we're rooting for you, Dr. Scott.
You know, I do this work, you know, in like my academic office, you know, and it's like I'm just, you know, working through probabilities in my head. It's nice to actually have something that people are interested in.
Yeah, this was a great one. So if you ever have another study on dice or can get another grant, so we'd love to hear about it. All right. Thanks again for the study. Yeah, the amazing work you did, and appreciate you joining us. So
thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.